Hello, listening people.
Hello.
Hello. Top two men Polish podcast host Bartek. I got you. I tripped you. I brought it back. I brought back the reference that we are in the top two men Polish podcasts. That's not it.
Yeah, well,
we're in the top 82 men Polish podcasts. No, we are in fact in the top 10 Polish podcasts, but we recently found out that we are in the top 82 men podcasts. There we are. And you're one of the hosts of the ranking in the top 80 for two men podcasts. It's you, Bartek. Hello, Bartek.
Hello, Ryan. How are you?
I am feeling like I am in the top 10 Polish podcasts, and that's quite the achievement. So I'm feeling like a good boy, Edmund. That's how I'm feeling.
That's a reference.
It's one of my, I don't know why, it's one of the quotes I often think of with Blackadder. I think it's just Rowan Atkinson's line delivery of it is just so forever burned into my brain.
What scene was that again?
That's in the Whiteadders episode, I'm pretty sure, where he's talking about trying to scam them and so on and so forth, and the devil's going to pat him on the boy and say it's something like that.
Oh,
I'm pretty sure
right.
It's in the Whiteadders episode, but
for some reason I was thinking season one, but
no
you're
that's
right,
a,
it was
that's
Whiteadders.
That's a two.
He was a bad Edmund, bad boy Edmund.
He was a bad, but he was. But we are not
the black
talking
vegetable.
About Blackadder today. We've already talked about Blackadder.
We talked about the entire thing
until they bring it back,
except that Cavaliers thing.
Yeah, we didn't talk about that, but. We are here today to talk about movies that have come recommended because here we have a little program called Pictures Powwow, the original PP. And
Take that Pokemon.
Have you recovered yet, Pokemon? Have you heard about Pal World? Pal World is a
get with the times
game that came out in the break of us, and it's already gone. People have already moved on from Pokemon with guns, and instead they're here for Pictures Powwow, where two men, yes, two men, and that's why we rank in the top 80 for two men podcasts, talk about movies that have come recommended, and the recommendation cycle goes Bartek 1 week, and then the week after that it is myself, and then the week after that it is you, the listening people, and that's where we are today. The listening people have recommended something. And yes, you at home listening can recommend a movie. All you have to do is tell us. And you can find the ways to do so in the description of the episode. But who recommended a movie? Who in particular? And what did they pitch our way?
It's a recurring listening person for us who's recommended this episode's film. It is one of our YouTube listening people, Dr. Rashes, who's given us quite a number of films over the years.
And I do not abide by them being a doctor. There is no evidence of their doctorate. I'm going to keep calling them Dre Eshies. I refuse.
We'll be Dre Eshies.
Dre Eshies. I refuse until they clarify, which we don't want them to, because every time we've made this statement.
Cut that out, Ryan.
No, no. Emphasize it. Triple it. Enhance.
Reverb.
Yeah, reverb.
Copy, paste, and like do the reverse thing.
Put it in black and white in audio form somehow.
And the Twin Peaks backwards talk.
Twin Peaks backwards talk, but we are talking about what film? What did our good non-doctor friend comment on the YouTube for us?
So the good doctor recommended for us a 2020 anime film, Josie the Tiger and the Fish.
Which is quite the ride of a film. If people, you have not seen this movie, I would say you should check it out. It is, as stated, a much newer Japanese animated film, so you will have that shiny, glossy, bright, colorful aesthetic that comes with that. We were talking about this when we did Penguin Highway, which is the video or episode that our good non-doctor friend left this comment on. If you enjoy Penguin Highway, maybe this, or oh, I'm glad you're recommending more animation and more animes, maybe Josie the Tiger and the Fish will be up your alley, and what a film. If I have to give a log line to sell people on it before we get into spoilers, it's a romance. Mm-hmm. A romance and a bit of a coming-of-age story as well, about a young man who has ambitions, has dreams, he's working towards those, but he needs the money, and he finds himself in some unusual circumstances and company, and he eventually falls in love with a girl, or at least has some complicated feelings, as does she, with a girl who is in a wheelchair.
Is in, like, the opposite part of, you know, they're similar ages, but she's got, like, the opposite circumstances.
Yes. And through adversity, differences, and challenges, will these two find connection? Will these two fall in love? Or will they remain just friends? Or will they realize that they're not meant to be? That there is Josie, the Tiger, and the Fish. Go watch it for yourself, because now we're going to talk about it with far, far more detail. And if you don't want to be spoiled on things, then shoo, shoo, shoo. But history relationship-wise, I have never heard of this film. I'm not familiar with this film. I looked up some of the cast and crew after watching it, and not too many, if any of them, really leapt out at me, specifically none for doing voice work. There's one or two that I know from live-action work, but I'm not as familiar with this production overall. I didn't know that this is an adaptation of an adaptation in a weird way. This was originally, I believe,
a novel
of short stories or stories like that. And then in 2003, there was a live-action adaptation, and around the same time that this anime came out, there was a Korean live-action adaptation. And what I know from both live-action adaptations is they choose the true ending of the story, which is not happy. That's all I know. I didn't go into much because I will be straight-laced with you all. I'm more interested to see what the live-action version of this story is than what I got in this animated version. I want to know what this comes across as in live action, with real people living, breathing, talking, facing off against each other, than what we got in this really, really fantastical and whimsical looking animation style, because this is a hard-hitting story. This is one in which, yes, it's romance, but it's dealing with some really tragic and heavy topics. And when I learned afterwards that there is a live action version that is well regarded, well heralded, I wanted to know more about that. But I learned that there's different endings. I didn't dive too much into it because maybe we will cover that on the podcast one day.
Possibly.
Like we did with Tiger and Crane Fist and Kung Pao, where we got a bit of both worlds. But
it's funny because one thing that we don't have to mention it, but I will anyway, is that yesterday you were like, hey, there are two films with this title. Which one are we doing? I'm like, oh, probably the anime one.
Mm-hmm.
So if we've made a mistake and you wanted us to do the 2003 film,
but you put this on an anime film review comment section. So we naturally went with the anime film with the same name as what you recommended. History, relationship, understanding. Are you familiar with this? Was there anything you knew about this going in? Had you seen it before? Anything?
The title was familiar, but I really didn't know anything about it. Like, I looked at the post, I'm like, oh, yeah, I have not heard of this one. I looked at some random screenshots of it, and it looked like a 2010s, 2020 kind of anime production. I got the feeling that this would be a bit more tonally in, like, a silent voice category, which in some ways ended up being true. It's funny, you mentioned, yeah, this is a pretty hard-hitting story that goes to some real places. I found it funny that, like, for a lot of it, there was a very, like, tropey nature to it. It was like, oh, yeah, I've seen a lot of this before. I've seen the tsundere archetype before.
Which means, for those
We'll get into that. We'll get into that, because that's a whole topic if we're not familiar with it. And for, like, yeah, I think, like, the first half of it, I kind of was skating along in that way, like, still enjoying it. But then, like, once, like, there's a big turn in the film, it, like, starts to get, like, really, like, serious and genuine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I didn't know too much about it. I looked up, similar things to what you said about, the cast and, like, the animation studio. Like, it's been the case with almost every single anime film we've ever done, where most of the voice actors only have done like one or two voice acting roles, except for a couple who are like the big names.
Mm-hmm.
And in this film, it's mainly like the main character's friends that he works with have like the biggest careers.
Yes.
Whereas everyone else, it's like, I've done just this, or I've done just this and one other thing.
And some of them are more notable for their live action work than any voice stuff, which is always a fascinating piece.
It usually is. Yeah, that usually is the case. It's not like, oh, these are people who have never done anything. It's usually they are more live action actors or like theater actors.
Unless, it depends too. Like when we watch anime in our spare time, there's so many shows that fit that category of what you just said. But then some of the literal main characters are people who have never done anything else other than that one piece of anime or that one voice acting thing or maybe one or two other voice acting things. And you're like, well, where did they go? How are they the main, literally the main character of Ping Pong the Animation? Where did they go?
I find it's rarer with like, you know, TV anime and maybe OVAs, but it does happen. Like that one was a big surprise. Like, oh, well.
Now,
six roles.
What did you feel about this particular film? We both didn't have much going in. I was a bit on the opposite to you. Like, I can see the silent voice comparison. For some reason, the title alone and the brief look at the thumbnail, the color of it, did make me think that this was going to be like Penguin Highway or even Ponyo. There's even visuals here that reminded me of Ponyo. The way that they first embrace and then later on how they end kiss is obviously her flying through the air, but there's that kiss where it has that too. I walked in thinking this was going to be like a Ghibli thing where it's magical realism. I didn't think in any way that this was actually just going to be a fairly grounded story in real drama of the human condition.
Yeah, I just meant like tonally and like visually, like, oh, it kind of looks more like a silent voice. To be honest, like one of the screenshots that I did see was of her imagination sequence, like swimming as a mermaid. So that did kind of throw a wrench into my expectations about like, is this going to be realism or magic realism?
So what did you feel about this?
Overall, I did like it. It's not one of my favorite anime films we've done, but certainly it shattered some of the expectations I had earlier of it being a bit more, you know, run of the mill.
Yeah, I feel a bit conflicted on this overall because I was enjoying the film. I was enjoying what this was offering, and unlike you, I'm not as deeply ingrained with the archetypes, the tropes, the character types that you get in these stories. So you'll get into more of that as we crack on in. But I was just taking it as this new thing. And as soon as I saw what the differences were between the two characters, yes, the obvious being one is a fully abled person and the other one isn't, I was compelled by that alone, and I thought that this was quite an interesting place to take a story, to actually delve into the difficulties of relationships between people who have disabilities and people who don't, because that's a real thing, and this film was playfully but still maturely tackling some of that in its own ways, and I thought the prickliness of their banter back and forth and the oddness of him being her servant and stuff was just so charming.
It was fun, yeah.
And then there comes a point in the movie where it's almost like it gets tired of being like this quaint, nice, but still serious story of love, and then just says no, we've got to be a chaotic, drama filled tragic romance story, and it kind of jumps the shark for me. And the back half, I love certain sections of it, but there's certain choices and certain character beats that I can't stand and made me genuinely angry. And not because the film is trying to make me angry, but because it leaned into just, we are now putting these bits in for the sake of separating the characters and giving them drama, when I didn't need that in the movie to get the points that it made across.
Yeah.
Now, walk us through a bit of that statement you said a bit before and how that influenced you when you were in the first section of the film.
You're talking about the tsundere thing I said.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an archetype. It's fairly well known. You've definitely seen examples of it before, even if you're not familiar with the term. The word tsundere, the tsun part means like kind of, you know, prickly or hot-headed, and dere means like sweet. It's an archetype usually, in most cases, ascribed to female characters, where they'll be, you know, very like kind of meanish or snappy towards their love interest, but then also show like their sweet side. And this character here, the Josie character, plays that archetype like very straight.
Mm.
Yeah. Like one example of other ones would be like, you'd look at Asuka from Evangelion. You got a bit of that with Misty or Kasumi from Pokemon.
Mm.
You know, characters like that.
Not what was the one we did, Patema Inverted?
Patema Inverted.
She was just, I like you.
Yeah, no, that wasn't really tsundere. And it's an archetype that you can probably believe this. It's very much a love it or hate it thing.
Like, it's something you get in Western media as well. Mm. Like it's a familiar thing. The Wedding Date, great example.
Yeah,
where our main character, you could say, is exactly that too.
For a Western animation version, Helga from Hey Arnold is a good example.
There you are. That's a perfect layup there for it. I was where to start? The animation style. We have had discussions about this, and perhaps it's our nostalgia, our longing, our love for when we grew up and the era a bit before, but the kind of 2010s, 2020s, digital, glossy, very bright, vibrant look is not something that I am as enamored by. I much prefer the Ghost in the Shell aesthetic, the Satoshi Kon aesthetic, like that kind of, it looks good, but there's a film grime to it at the same time. Like, you can tell that someone got their fingers involved.
There's a very specific art style to it.
There's a color grading and just a certain thing to it.
That was my main thing I was thinking when I said it's kind of more in the silent voice category.
But how did you feel about its look and how it was implemented during the run?
Visually, yeah, it was nice and clean, but I think it was like I guess you can say camera and animated works, but yeah, the camera work in this where it really gave a sense that these 2D environments had depth to them. Like, you could tell that this is like a 3D location that they're in, even though it's all 2D. Like, you have so many like tracking shots where it's like on a diagonal angle. Like, I'm thinking just before he first meets her, when he's walking in the dark down that like street,
mm-hmm.
You know, it's following him. You can tell like how far away the walls of the fences of all the houses are from him. You've got a couple of shots where they're like, you know, panning around the characters, and it's like very fluid and everything's still consistent. Nothing gets off model. A lot of shots of like city and busy places, like near the end where he's like searching for her. I found all of that like really breathtaking. There's a really nice shot. It was when he was leaving the zoo at the end where he notices the wheel treads in the in the snow, and like the camera is like following along them from really low. It's like you're a really tiny train following these treads. It's like really nice visual work.
There was a very dynamic use of location, space, and the camera. How it moved and glided, and the cuts and the framing was definitely there. It has a mixture of 2D and 3D that was very abundant, especially when we got to the water scenes. There was like a creek or a river or something that had some leaves on it, and it looked like that 3D CG, but mixed with that gloss that the rest of the film had to kind of mask it, because we have seen new and old, the mixing of 2D and 3D animation together.
Mm.
And you can always kind of tell when the 3D part gets in there, like, oh, here's a CG part of it. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, yeah.
And it can be a little bit distracting. It was very Featherlight touch in this. I like the color of the movie as well, because although this is quite a dour story at times, it's still vibrant and bright and hopeful. And this is visually telling you that this is a happy story rather than a sad and drab one. When I look at some just still images from the live action version, it looks like a much more drab movie. Like, you look at the poster in comparison to this one, and it's basically the same idea of them running down a street in Japan, him goofily behind her, and she's like, yay, in a wheelchair. But you look at the live action poster and it's just all grays and browns and blacks, and it's just so drab.
Maybe we should like double feature that with like The Untouchables or something.
Yes, 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 yes. And then with the character designs, I didn't find them as particularly grabbing or as alluring as other animes we have watched, even Pentamo Inverted, which I didn't like that much. I kind of still remember some of those character designs. This, not to be dismissive, but to me, this felt the safe standard of what you would design these characters. Like, the main guy looks like interchangeable anime boy who's nice.
Yes.
And
absolutely.
There was not a single character in this that I will remember as like, oh, that was a great little character design. Even the grandmother, even the librarian, even the children. It's no Paprika. It's no we get others we've gone through on this podcast. Even what was the one that you reckon? I liked it. Why am I forgetting? The wolf one. Wolf Children.
Wolf Children.
Wolf Children has memorable character designs. This one, it just kind of falls in that realm of like what people who don't like anime critique anime to be, where it's like, look at him.
Yeah.
Just look at him.
That's another comparison to Silent Voice. Like, the designs are very similar. The best I could say is like, I liked the multiple like different hairstyles that Josie had. And that's... everything else, yeah, kind of by the numbers. It's kind of funny, going back to the whole tsundere thing, there was an anime in late 2010, not 2010, late 2000s, I think from like 2008, called Toradora. And looking at the main characters of this, I might even pull up a photo just to show you, the character designs of our two leads are very similar, down to the fact that... the female in that one has, yeah, same hair color.
That's amusing.
Yeah.
He's pulling it up while you investigate.
Everyone, you can
this.
Google Toradora.
As we all know how to spell Toradora. In my viewpoints, oh boy, they do look similar-ish. She has, in comparison though, in Toradora, I'm looking at it now, she has a much tinier head.
Yeah. Also,
that's the difference.
Also, the animal that she's associated to is a tiger. So that I woke up this morning like, oh, that's a funny comparison, because that's what the character in this film hates.
Wow, yeah, I can see that. I'll go on.
Tying back to something that I brought up in Penguin Highway, and going back to the whole voice act thing, I mentioned in that the best friend character in that, like the little boy, was voiced by a very, very prolific voice actress. Mm. That voice actress actually has a title. Her name is Rie Kugimiya, of being like the tsundere queen, because she's very good at playing those kind of archetypes. She voices that character in Toradora.
In Toradora, right.
It's one of the big four that people point to.
Now, with the film at hand, what is something that you want to break apart, look at, discuss, something that lingered with you or an observation that it brought out in you when you watched it or after this was all said and done?
Yeah, I think even though it is sort of something that's been done before, like the breaking down of or the coming together of their closeness was just a really nice thing to see, because it starts off like very passively hostile, sometimes not even passively, where it I saw some people online were saying like, oh, fucking abusive relationship kind of thing, where it is kind of more played for comedy.
It is.
But like when you had the scene of like him bringing her to the ocean and like she's crawling towards because this is finally the goal, and then he picks her up, like, I can just take you there.
Mm.
And they have this very nice little intimate moment where they go out to the water and she tastes the saltiness of the sea. That actually kind of reminded me of Potemma Inverted, where I was saying in that film that, the premise of this film like really justifies them being very like close and intimate. And like that moment there kind of reminded me of that, where it's like, hey, me holding you like this is totally justified.
Weirdly, I thought of Grave of the Fireflies with a lot of the beach stuff with this. Obviously, this is more upbeat. Clearly,
this isn't the live action version.
Every film is more upbeat than Grave of the Fireflies, it feels.
Can we flash back to the episode we did before that where I was like, I don't know anything about that film, and you and Reese were like, oh god.
we literally, it's too bad this is an audio based podcast. I pulled at my collar and steam came out when Bartek said that.
I think I remember that.
And I went,
But even Reese was like, oh my god.
Oh my god, yes. But yeah, I think that was very much the key to my enjoyment of the relationship is you have the contrasts of them being so hostile, them being so separated. She has the door separating them throughout a majority of their flirtations, and he is bitching about her to his friends while they're out at the bar drinking, and he's slowly becoming an alcoholic because of her. like there's a lot of that stuff, and he's slowly losing the hours at his other job because he's being committed to her.
He's got like a million jobs, but this one pays the best. So.
And his friends are losing track of him over time. Like, There's an emphasis put into that toxicity that we're talking about, but it is played for obvious comedic effect, but it's about the contrast. You have to go from one to the other. Now,
you have to go from Tsun to Derry.
Yeah, the argument you make is, does it go too far? Is it too extreme? Is it too unrealistic? I can see that being something, a case made, but I totally reject the idea of like, oh, it's toxic because it exists like this format. Like, that's the point. Like, it's like when you hear from people, it's like, this character is bad because they are a bad person. It's like, yeah, well, there's a reason why they do that. Like, are they meant to be the evil antagonist, or are they a hero who's slightly shitty and they have to redeem and become better and you see them evolve? Like, well, that's the point. That's why you watch a romance like this. Like you said, this archetype is a love it or hate it, but that's literally the foundation of these relationships. It's a love it or hate it type of thing where they love and hate each other. And when you finally get those moments of intimacy, like taking her to the beach, or even I thought about the train ride, the train station, and how he sees people disrespect her, treat her as lesser than, don't even give her the time of day, blame her for problems because they are selfish people, insecure people, or just outright bigoted and dismissive. And that's how we meet her. Like, someone pushed her down. That's what we hear. She gets pushed down and she leaps into this guy's arms.
Yeah, like we're introduced to her and her grandmother, and her grandmother's like a very paranoid person. Like, for her granddaughter's sake, you know, very careful, and it's like, we're not going outside because of that incident. We're no longer going on walks. You're just going to stay at home.
Overprotective.
Yep, and there's that case. In that case here, with the audience looking at that character and being like, okay, how paranoid is this person? Like, did someone actually just push her, or was it like an accident? And then once you start seeing like how people treat her, and also how the film book ends it with her also going down a very similar road, it makes you wonder, like, what has this character gone through in life? What sort of discriminations?
We even see it after the grandmother dies and she's being pressured into what her financials are going to be, and she says she's going to be an artist and do this, and they just scoff at her. These men we never see again and we never saw before just look down at her as this pathetic individual who cannot fend for herself but needs to, like, it's even down to that degree. So when she starts to form connections despite her cynical and abrasive nature, it brings a tear to your eye. Like, my favorite relationship in the movie, and I wish the movie used it more, was her and the librarian. Like, her and the librarian had an uncomplicated friendship. Mm. That's what I appreciated about it.
Simple female friendship, yeah.
It wasn't hampered by her saying the wrong thing and the librarian is like, oh, that upset me. Like, and I, like, no, no, no. They both understood each other. They both appreciated each other's company. They were both willing to give each other criticisms and advice and take it on board. Like, I was waiting, especially because we had hit a dramatic low point, when the librarian was telling her how to better do her drawings better. I was waiting for, like, oh, and Josie's going to act like a fucking brat about it. But no, no. She legitimately understood the critique there and made the work better. And if this librarian didn't help her, then it wouldn't have been as good. Like, that I loved all of that. And that I wish that character got more time on the screen. I thought she was a great addition to the story. And when we did live in at the near the end, the library setting and how this is Josie's new home, I was kind of a bit bummed that, in my eyes, I wish the film actually spent more time there because I didn't feel like it earned it enough. It was on the cusp. Like, again, see, if you said it did for you, I wouldn't argue. Just for my taste, I wanted more time in the library. I wanted more time with that character. I just wanted more time there than some of the other things that the film prioritizes.
I was going to say, there's another female character I think they could have taken the screen time from and given to the librarian.
You know Letterboxd, the film review? I like to log things there once in a while.
I peek at your account sometimes.
I'm waiting to write for that one. May is not, in fact, a good woman. She's, in fact, a bad one because she has this line at the end where she's like, I'm a good woman. It's like, no, you're not. You're legit. She is. We'll break it apart, but all I'll say right now, one word, despicable. Despicable. What were your thoughts on the blossoming relationship a bit more, like outside of like that beach scene? What were things that worked or didn't work for you?
I like that they bonded over their passions. Like, he had the line about, you know, she asked him, you know, why were you nice to me? Why did you come back? Or something like that. And it's like, I can't hate anyone who has like a genuine love for the ocean, because the film really firmly establishes. It's like the first thing the film does is like show you, oh, this guy's all about like the ocean. You first see him on like in like a diving expedition.
Mm-hmm.
He works
scoobering,
at a,
yeah.
Yeah, he works at a diving shop. You get, you know, shots of him at his college doing a course related to that. He's working to study abroad with a good opportunity, working for a scholarship. And after like a month of, you know, misery, as it was, you know, following the orders of this bratty girl, he goes into a room and sees like, oh, she loves the ocean too. And the one wish she gives him is like, I want to see the sea. And just seeing like this kind of mutual love kind of work together. And even with the librarian, it kind of goes into it too, where she's a big fan of the same author as Josie. Mm-hmm. That's what they bond over.
And then eventually the Little Mermaid is a thing that is prominent, and it goes into that sea metaphor and theme. Yeah. And she comes up with her own version of the story that matches the version of her life that she's going through. And just to keep hammering in on what you're saying, my favorite, like one of my favorite things that turned me around about our actual lead male character, I didn't really care for him, honestly. I found him painfully dull. But once we heard the reasoning behind everything and the titular fish,
like the came flashback into play, thing,
I really loved that.
That was a really
cute
scene.
I truly like that. And no joke, and I don't mean this just to keep saying I want other versions of this film or I want to watch. I actually would have liked an animated short or even film about him as a little boy and everything he described in his past. I was like, I would want to watch a Miyazaki movie about a boy who or girl who discovers their family is getting divorced and they go into this magical world of fascinations of creatures and plants and stuff. I watched it. It was called The Boy and the Heron. And I watched it and it won an Oscar recently. So I watched that movie and I liked it very much.
And you can call it The Boy and the Herring.
There you are. There you are. Thank you. We can wrap it up there, everyone.
To be fair, every time you've mentioned that film in the past, like the first few times, I kept thinking of herring. Like, it's about a fish?
No. Fish are involved, but no. No.
They get eaten.
But you were going to elaborate or say something, or
was I?
Were you had a point you wanted to branch off on? Because we were talking about like the Little Mermaid stuff and the library.
Oh, right. You, every time in this episode you've mentioned that the live action stuff is darker, it's reminding me of like, oh, the Disney Little Mermaid compared to like the original Hans Christian Andersen version. It's like, oh, wow.
Mm.
There's a very meta dual dynamic there too.
When you see live action adaptations of anime, now this is an anime adaptation of a short story that was originally made into a live action movie. This is not an anime adaptation of live action, which, do those exist? Do anime adaptations of live action things exist? Because it's common.
Anime adaptations of live action.
Yeah. We know the opposite is very much prevalent both in the West and in Japan, but is the opposite the case? Is there many anime versions or takes or adaptations of what was a live action thing?
You know what? I've never watched anything from this. I think there used to be a sort of running series that like a Masterpiece Theater kind of thing that did adapt the one I'm thinking of is actually book first. I know that there's an anime adaptation of like Les Mis-Rab.
Yes.
But
okay.
I don't know if that counts. But yeah, there's...
I wonder if there's an anime adaptation of Power Rangers perhaps or something. Is there an anime adaptation of that?
I mean, there's a lot of, I guess, Super Sentai kind of stuff like that or like parodies. I just remembered, I think that Masterpiece Theater thing also has one for The Sound of Music.
Oh, there you are.
Yeah.
But I was just curious because... when I think of, you know, the difference, we talk about the differences of like, the live action one looks more serious, more dark. It inherently has to be. When you see live action adaptations of anime, they have many different reasonings for what they do. And the ones that fail where they try to perform like the cartoons, and it's like, you can't, but then you have the ones that go so drastically against it that you go, what's the point? And this is a story where in anime, you can have his goofy best friend in the shop be the most himbo anime boy dickhead you've ever seen. He aggravated me so much because he was too familiar for my taste.
He was very tropey.
But then by the end, I actually appreciated him. Like, oh, because you're grown up.
Yeah,
like, by the end, I was like, oh, you're the grown-up out of this group of people. Like, that, again, playing with the love it or hate it stuff. I hate that type of character. I'm tired of it. But by the end, that his flip of him actually being the most sensible person, I was like, you know what? You fucking nailed me, movie. You got me.
I liked the line he had where he was trying to get him to the library and the Taneo, the main guy, was like, oh, no, I don't want to go. And he's like, he basically said, like, I'm not doing this as your friend. I'm doing this as your diving buddy who's watching your oxygen. That was a really good line.
That was a good line. Now, are there any other things that you want to praise or highlight or go over before I kind of unload the things that didn't work for me and perhaps things that didn't work for you?
I will say there was one point in the film where I was a little bit apprehensive, like, oh, is this where it's going? But I kind of turned around on it when I saw how it was playing out. When we had the, like, turning point, the car accident, it was immediately following, like, a scene at the tragic version of the scene at the beach where, mm-hmm. you know, they're not coming to an understanding, and she has the line, like, healthy people wouldn't understand.
Mm.
And then we had, like, the car accident where I was starting to think, like, oh, God, are they really going to do, like, a hokey thing where now he's going to be disabled?
Mm.
That and, like, bond over now being on the same level? I was very worried that something like that was happening. But then when it actually did take the rest of the story, like, really maturely and seriously, that was something I really appreciated.
I appreciated that, too. That choice did sour me on the movie because I was doing the exact same thing. Gritting my teeth going, please don't do the, he has to be crippled to understand who she is, because he does understand. Like, no, he doesn't 100%, but he's an empathetic person. Like, he gets it, but through circumstances outside of his control, he's been looked at by her as someone who doesn't understand. Mm. So it would have been unnecessarily cruel. and mean-spirited of the movie to physically put him in the same place as her to, what, teach him a lesson of how to be empathetic when he already gets it. Like, I was worried about that, and it did kind of piss me off for a portion of the movie. But another thing that I really was it ended on a really good note. The movie ends on a really good note, and then it does something that you always tilt your head at and go, do you need to, when you've already ended your movie? Which is throughout the credits and the end of the credits, we get a further continuation of what happens after you cut to black.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was effective, and I actually enjoyed it, and I thought that it was worth putting in the movie, because we've seen this in live action and animation where the end credits continue on an ending of some sort, like it's a new thing or we're going over here. Like,
yeah.
Whatever happened to Austin Powers' other clone time version of himself and how he ends up with Heather Graham, you know, like that type of thing.
Mm.
You get those, but like, and that's a comedic silliness, but like, I actually thought that the material included in the credits of them kind of interacting and getting on with their lives and bonding with their friends and him enjoying Mexico. And then at the end of the credits, he surprises her and she's like, ah, pretty cocky for a servant. Like, I really had a big smile and I said, okay,
there was a couple of edited twice
perfectly. Very difficult to do.
There were some really nice moments too. Like, you established earlier in the film that, you know, she doesn't use any social media. And then in that montage, you see like, oh, she's in bed, like, you know, feeling on her phone, clearly like talking to him because you get shots of him also doing it.
Yeah. She adapts. That's a part of the story for her, is she has been living a sheltered life because of what her grandmother thinks she needs. But also as an individual, she's been so hurt, so wounded, so internal that she doesn't need to. So little things like, she eventually agrees that the cat has a name, for instance.
Or it's the name that he gave her.
Or that she can take herself to this place, or on and on and on. And then the use of talking through the phone and stuff is something that, you know, social media and texting was not something she did before and now she does. Or showing people her pictures and selling her pictures and using that gift for something other than escapism. When she's down and out and sad.
Yeah, one other thing that I really liked, which I didn't really pick up on that quickly, was it's mentioned that she was basically born that way, that she couldn't be able to walk. Going into the film knowing that, like, our main character...
No, walking into the film. you rolled in. Go on.
Doing a...
somersault. Backflips.
No, yeah. What was that Soviet film we did last year? The Treasure Island?
Yeah.
The Treasure Island meme walking into the film. You know, knowing that our character was in a wheelchair, I was imagining like, okay, she's not going to be moving around much on her own. But like, you get a lot of scenes of her not in the wheelchair and like crawling around and like being able to really get around on her own in a way. And that really kind of... the animation really complemented that idea that, like, she was born this way, that she's used to being able to move around. So, like, there's a lot of purpose behind the way she moves around on her own when she's not in the wheelchair, and I really appreciated that.
I liked how lived in and thought out, and I'll use the word again, empathetic, this was towards people with disabilities. You said it. You come into this thinking, oh, she's in a wheelchair. They're not going to animate her outside of the wheelchair too much. And maybe if it's for dramatic stakes. But you see her not in the wheelchair for as much time as you see her in it. And
probably,
you see her sitting down and crawling around. And she's made a life. This is how people work. This is how they operate. This is how, you know, her house is made for her. And it's easier. And you think about it too, like typical Japanese housing works to her benefit in this case, where she's like sliding around on the wooden floors and, you know, slide doors where she doesn't have to reach for a knob or like things like that. It's very well detailed. And there was only one moment for me where I got aggravated at the film using her disability as a convenient thing for drama, which is during the car scene where he gets hit by the car. Her wheelchair just getting stuck in the middle of the road on this little pothole And I'm not saying that this isn't something that happens. It is. I've seen it. But, like, the way that the camera is framed for it, the music, the intensity, and the fact that not a single person stops when she's on a zebra crossing. It's a zebra crossing.
Yeah.
And there's a woman in a wheelchair. None of the motorcycle, the car, no one thinks, oh, I might slow down. It was just one of those things where it's like, we need this to hit the beat that happens next. And it was using her disability as a means to get there. And I thought it was disingenuous.
I think I've seen that, in a lot of like anime stuff where it's like, oh, someone is, you know, stuck in the middle of a crossing. Like, oh, the cars aren't going to realistically slow down. I kind of gave this film a little bit of a pass though when I noticed like, oh wait, it's raining and you can see like that car like, you know, sliding along the water. And it's like, okay, maybe there is a bit of a justification.
There is, I guess. Like that's a fair point. I just thought still it used her wheelchair as a means to an end. Rather than
did she actually
she got stuck in like a little hole and okay, then I thought she literally had to fling herself out of the chair to crawl towards him and she hit her head and she had that like that gorgeous shot of like her eyes and you see in the iris of her eyes the reflection of him on the ground in the car
because I noticed that in this sequence like she was suddenly using like an electric wheelchair. I thought it malfunctioned.
No, it was just like a piece of terrain.
Okay, because I don't think she used the electric one after that point, so I thought she used
it after that point. She ends the movie with the electric wheelchair.
Oh, okay.
She after her grandmother dies, she starts using the electric wheelchair way more often, if not always. At least majority of the time, it is the electric one. Interchangeable. Again, thought process put in to it. But time to get into the things that I really loathed about it. May. She's a terrible person, a terrible character. She exists only to necessitate just cliches.
Yeah.
Terrible, awful romance things. Love triangle. She's a fucking incel. I'll say it. She's an incel. She's a fucking little weasel, backstabbing bitch. And the film, after a certain point, treats it as if that's a cute thing for her, like, oh, her and Josie high five each other or give each other the double thing and they realize, oh, we did that, oh, I hate you. It's played for jokes. I'm like, no, this is an awful person that I think no one in this friendship group should ever spend time with after the things she's done and the way she goes about trying to fix it. I hated her. That moment where she does the, he doesn't love you, he doesn't care about you because you're a cripple, like all that stuff. He pities you. I sat back in my chair going, what the fuck is this? It was just such a lie to me. Like, yeah, she's lying, but I just thought that the film was pulling this out of its ass just because in a story, you have to get to this point. Like, no character had any truly negative feelings about this woman being in a wheelchair or any anxieties. Like, we had gotten to a point where everyone was good and comfortable with it. So you have to have someone throw in a bomb and tell the woman to her face that we aren't your friends, we just pity you. And I'm like, fuck you, movie.
Because when the film started, you know, we were introduced to this character and she's like a fairly normal presence in the film. Like, she's one of the people who our main guy Tsuneo like works with and sometimes goes on expeditions with. Clearly she has some sort of a thing for her, but she seems like a sweet enough girl, and you know, it's a female presence for his main friendship group. She's got some hijinks with the male friend, which, you know, typical sort of anime stuff.
I'll be honest, I thought they were romantically in interlinked with each other, the two friends with each other. Like, I understood that she maybe had feelings for our main character, but honestly, if the movie didn't have this big scene and this big turn, I would have walked in saying, those two friends were clearly flirty with each other. Because they had that kind of dickhead bond where it's like guy and girl side characters who watch the main romance happen. And in the background, they have their own little romance. You see that in so many rom-coms.
Yeah, I guess. I didn't see them as having the flirty aspect, but everything else, yeah, the same. It's like they're the, you know, bickering group. Like, there's one scene where, like, the guy is saying something, like, you know, that will piss her off. And then she, like, stuffs something in his mouth, like a little anime gag.
Yeah. Yeah. But I'm being very vitriolic about it. But this moment, this character, the way things proceeded to go with her, I mean, walk us through a bit more of like your takes and your reaction to it. Because to me, I was blindsided by it. I'm like, whoa.
I was blindsided they went so like hard on making her so unsympathetic. Yeah, she, like, you had their initial meeting scene, which was, like, awkward. It's like, okay, that's fine. Maybe, like, something could come of this. Or if not, that's fine,
too. And Josie was awkward.
Yeah.
She realized that this person she treats as a servant has a life outside of her, and it scared her.
Yeah, it's a completely understandable thing.
Rooted from character. That's what happened in that first
one. You had the companion sequence of, like, going to the library for the first time. It's like, oh, this place is amazing. And this one is like, oh, this one makes me feel uncomfortable. I don't want to come here. And because, you know, I'm not so good at expressing myself, I come across, you know, a little harshly in that sense. But then once you start getting, you know, the friends coming to her, yeah, like, even the guys, like, blindsided. Like, we were here to cheer her up.
Yeah. And then you realize, because there's a sick detail thrown in, which is, how did they know where she lived? And the girl, she revealed she remembered an off detail that he had mentioned months ago.
Yeah, like the river or something.
And you're like, oh, before she reveals her true intentions of being there, you take that as like, oh, okay, that's just, you know, nothing wrong with that. But then once she unloads, you're like, that's sick, actually. It's sick that she remembered this off detail about where this girl she apparently hates lives. You know what I mean? Like, it, for me, it completely reshaped everything we knew about this character because it was so out of the blue. Mm. Like, even a little detail like that, that I easily could let just fly on by because I have to get the characters to the place they have to go to. It's completely different once... After that point, she's like, goes to this girl's house to bully her into falling back in love with a guy that she separated them in the first place. It's icky.
That I would fully buy into the idea that, like, oh, it was like such a pre-planned malice kind of thing. But yeah, certainly it doesn't paint her in a good light when, you know, the second interaction they have is that scene where it's like he pities you kind of thing.
Why did she go there then if it wasn't thought out? Do you think that was an on-the-cuff, spur-of-the-moment thing?
Because she
immediately leaps into that.
I kind of did, yeah, because, again, up to that point, I wasn't expecting such a harsh turn.
But then, the way she tries to get them to come back together is equally off the cuff and harsh, but we know that it's her planning out the responses that she's hoping for. Like, hence, when she goes there to kind of bully her into being like, well, I love him and he's going to love me and you're pathetic, blah, blah, blah. And then it's revealed, like, that's her goading Josie into doing something. That's pre-planned. Mm. That's coming. And it's, I don't know, it's just... No matter how you cut it, it makes the character so irredeemable that you struggle to know why did they include it at all. Like, why do you need to have this addition in the story? Why do you need to make this character this way only to then the film itself think that she's actually a quirky, fun, little goofy girl who we should be smiling and laughing at by the end? And I'm like... Dude, we got like 15 minutes left after you did this. I don't have enough time to fucking register what you just done and forgive at the same time. Like, I'm fucking fuming right now about this. I don't think I've hated a character more in any anime than this woman here. She literally says, I'm a good woman. No, you're not. Fuck you.
I don't know. Yeah, like I liked the bickering interaction where it was like, I can name 100 things about him. I really like Josie's response to that.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was a really good thing that complemented the rest of the film we watched. It's like, you can name all these minor things, but you can't even name this one very key component to him where it's like, I know that this man loves the ocean kind of thing, and mm-hmm. that's like the center of his being. That was a really good line coming from this character.
I'm not opposed to a love triangle.
Me neither.
Not at all.
I just don't think the film needed one.
I don't think the film did it well.
Did the original story have...
Who knows? We'll have to find out when we cover it next time. No, I... Yeah, that the back half just soured for me because we needed to be so punching in the numbers for what you have in a romantic story. Like, we need to find an excuse for them to separate. We need to find an excuse for them to both hit their low points. So let's physically cripple him and threaten the idea that he won't get to live out his dreams. And in so doing, guilt Josie in a way for existing. Like, and having this other woman come in and basically point to her and say, you're the reason everything's bad right now. Let him live freely. And you're a fucking disabled freak. I just... And then just to suddenly turn around and be like, oh, it's okay. Oh, it's all okay.
Yeah, I don't know, guys.
It's one of those things where, yeah, you throw so much salt in the wound and you're not, and it's like the film's not expecting that that will have long lasting repercussions and infections. And the film is too clean. That's its problem. It's too fucking clean. And when I learn that the original story, or at least some versions of this, don't have a happy ending, I can nod and say, with what I saw in this anime, I believe that.
If things went just a bit differently.
And that this is the readjusted happy version. I'm like, yeah, I can feel that. With what they've done with these things, I can feel that.
The darker ending is exactly the same, except the kids didn't like the story as much.
That's it. And they boo and throw tomatoes at her. Would you recommend this film?
I would. There's a lot of really nice high points in it. There's definitely, some bits can be a little bit too, and we said it many times in this episode, by the numbers. But I think the overall presentation and those really great high moments are worth seeing. Thank you, Dr. Rishis.
I'm on the fence. I do recommend it, but I'm kind of on the fence. This is one of those films, and this is very important to one's consumption of movies and media and TV shows. You can come across something that makes you like another thing more. So we've talked about it a bit already, but A Silent Voice was a film I also had issues with. I liked the central idea, but there were some things here. But this movie made me like that movie way more in retrospect. Like, the balancing of having characters who are discriminatory against someone with a disability and yet having it be a love story and having it be complicated was the conceit of that movie. Like, the conceit of that movie is about a guy who fucking bullied her in the first place. And you have to really come to terms with, can people change and so on. Well, this movie, it throws that in like 5-10 minutes at the end with a side character, and it just doesn't work. It just doesn't work. Well, here's a movie that deals with a lot of similar ideas, but that is an actual central thrust of a story. Well, this, it sinks a story that it doesn't need that to be in there at all. So I'm flip-floppy, but I do say this is a recommendation. I enjoyed this way more than Potemkin Inverted. This one at least makes me believe in the romance and makes me believe in the characters.
This one definitely better paced.
And it didn't need some magical gimmick to justify itself. That's it. One of the weird trivia points that I want to mention is it says on IMDb that this is the first anime to feature a crippled artist.
Okay.
And I was like, I guess you have to be specific, because I don't think they can say in
anime film?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
I don't know, but I was going to say, I don't think they could say in an anime trivia section for a film that it would be the first film to feature a person in a wheelchair in a leading role. I don't believe that. So hence the artist a bit is thrown in. Like, we have to specify artist, because I would imagine that there's been movies in Japan that feature characters prominently in a wheelchair, but who knows?
Yeah. Ryan, you and I are number one on the list of top 80 men podcasts who are Polish.
That's it. Now, it is your turn to recommend a movie that will be up for discussion on this podcast, in which we are two spitting young Polish gentlemen, and that's a reason why we get in two separate top lists of podcasts.
Does the description say gentlemen?
I just say gentlemen.
I think it's just two spitting young Polish men.
Well, we're getting older.
Because that's why the algorithm, I mean, the person who made the list.
Getting older. We might have to change it around.
We're going to be 3T1 this year.
Yes. So what is your selection for Pictures Powwow?
So I'm recommending my Hollywood film. I'm not recommending an anime.
Okay.
But, Ryan, you get no points for guessing why I'm recommending this. In fact, you lose points if you guess. I'm recommending the 2002 film The Count of Monte Cristo.
I know why you recommended that.
This is a film that I've been planning. I've even probably mentioned it a few times. Like, I'm planning to watch something related to The Count of Monte Cristo
Is this with Leo? I can't remember who's in this adaptation.
I haven't looked into it. I think Guy Pearce was the name I saw.
I'm familiar with the more 1940s traditional version, but let's do the 2002.
This was something I wasn't even planning to do on the podcast, but just I was planning to do it before a specific thing, and it just happened to line up.
Explain a bit of the lore reasonings now, and we'll get into it next week even more when we actually cover it.
In the last year, I've been injecting Ryan, Rachel, his wife, and Will, our friend, with weeb genes. And I think literally after we do next episode, we're going to start watching Gun Kutsuo, which is an anime that's Ryan's recommending, which is an adaptation of The Count of Monte Cristo with like a specific twist.
Mm-hmm.
And I kept saying, I need to watch something related to The Count of Monte Cristo because the twist won't mean much to me unless I'm familiar with the story.
Yeah, so when we say twist, I mean it's just unusual way of adapting.
It's the perspective,
classic literature.
Yeah, perspective of a different character. It's like, I'd like to know what that character's like in the real, proper story.
Well, again, I don't know if they're in the films, if that helps you.
Then that'll be very funny.
Sure, again, we'll talk about it next time. It's been a while since I've read the book. So in my recollections, this character that's in the anime that we're not talking about on the pod is like in one chapter of the book.
That's fine.
But in the book, again, we'll talk about it more. But in the book, my recollections is the first half is there's lots of different characters' POVs about the Count, and then eventually it becomes a story about the Count himself. But we'll be talking about the 2002 version of The Count of Monte Cristo, so please, everyone, make sure to give that a viewing for yourself, and make sure to read the story. You don't have to, but it's a good story. No matter what... Oh no! I found out who's in the 2002 one, and it's an aged like a fine wine. It is Guy Pearce. Yes, he's in it, but the lead man himself is Jim Caviezel, Jesus Christ himself, Jesus from Mel Gibson's Passion of the Christ.
Oh, okay. I was like, which Jesus?
Jesus.
Christ, yeah. Superstar?
Who, and Henry Cavill's in this movie too. Superman's in it. Great.
Oh.
Great.
Well, you already mentioned Jesus in it.
I did mention. and Luis Guzman.
Ooh. We haven't seen him in a while.
Ooh, Richard Harris, Dumbledore.
Ooh.
Ooh, the OG. Ooh.
I really liked the episode where they talked about Josie the Tiger and the Fish, especially the part where they went, ooh, for like 10 seconds.
Ooh, it's got more people in it. Okay, so we will be back next time. You can follow us on social media, Spit and Polish Presents. You can recommend movies to us on there or at our email address, which is...
spitandpolished@gmail.com.
All of this is provided in the description below. And while you are here, you should rate and review the podcast. Give us a thumbs up or share it around with all of your friends, family, foes, lovers, corpses, whatever it is, pets maybe enjoy this podcast. I hear the ooh part of it, and the cat starts scratching, and you have to say shut up, and then the cat runs away and then doesn't appear in the film again.
Can we rebrand as Spit and Poolish Presents?
No.
I realized there was no really good O sound in the name.
Yes, but until next time, listening people, remember to be kind to each other, or else I won't be a good woman. And I will be, in fact, a very bad one and tell you things that are unreasonably cruel.
My. So you're going to watch Toradora?
Of course.
It's got a catchy OP.
I'm going to write that in our anime watch list, Toradora.
I remember it being all right. You know what? The goofy male friend in this, I looked at his film, voice acting. I think like his second or third role was like a minor character in that.
There you are.
Yeah.